I don't want to sound like some football hardo.
David. Football David.
The Dave Dameshek Football Program. Available on iTunes and at davedameshek.nfl.com. Now here's your host, Dave Dameshek.
Hi to low football fans. What's going down? I hope all's well wherever you are. Studio 66 ready to roll. Football is nigh. I mean, it's going to be kicking off in a matter of days now. And really, it's not inaccurate to say it's going to be kicking off in a matter of minutes, you know? Then again, my impending death is also a matter of minutes away. Hopefully more minutes, though.
Just got really dark.
Well, listen, you know what? you know my rule. No jive here in Studio 66, and deserves got nothing to do with it, fellas. We all got it coming. That's quoting from the magical Unforgivable movie, but also speaking of no jive, this is magical. Check it out, what we got, everybody, from one of our favorites, one of the great citizens of the Czech Republic, the society that knows no borders, Andrew Raby from the UK. He keeps track of the DDFP Red Challenge flag. Before you know it, we'll be making our Red Challenge flag picks in front of every game in the NFL season, and he sent along this. Rule number one, no jive, DDFP, just Huey and applesauce. And even, look at that. The one thing I like is, though, that Raby did squeeze in a little plug for his website there, DDFP Red Flag, so you can keep track, ddfpredflag.com. But how handsome is that, handsome? What
it's
do you
beautiful.
Think about that? It's
it really
handsome.
Is beautiful.
You know what else is handsome? What else is beautiful? Is the sound of that voice and the man whose head it's coming out of. All the way from the UK. Maybe he lives next door to Andrew Raby. Maybe he doesn't. I don't know, and I don't care. He's our resident Miami Dolphins fan. It's Handsome Hank.
He's Handsome Hank. He's Handsome Hank. He's Handsome Hank.
Hello, Handsome. How are you?
I'm very well indeed. Thank you.
Are you?
It's been a while.
You're excited. Are you excited about the Cutty era to get going? I mean, yeah. It's kind of underway.
Yeah, I think, did we talk about, last time I was here, I think maybe that had just happened. Yeah.
Oh, it did. Okay.
His
signing, but now that we've seen him a little bit in the uniform.
Well, we've seen him play like 7 snaps. Tonight, actually, we're recording this on Thursday afternoon. The Miami Dolphins take on the Philadelphia Eagles in a big preseason clash. Maybe he'll throw 4 or 5 more passes and I'll be more excited even than I am now.
Coming up in just a few, we're going to get into the AFC West and NFC West. We'll see if we can get through both those divisions today. We intended to do that on our earlier show this week, but we got sidetracked with Game of Thrones talk, and we had Maurice Jones-Drew back in, and we had Will Blackman of the Redskins. He's delightful, and the birthday girl, Cindy Freeland, so we had a full boat, and we tackled a number of major issues. I encourage you to go back and dig those up. Legitimately, though, it was interesting stuff on Odell Beckham and whether that was a dirty hit or if that was football. We get in on that. Kaepernick and beyond, what's going on there? And like I say, some good Thrones talk. Ooh, also, we tried to settle what's the worst quarterback that Bill Belichick could win a Super Bowl with. I think that was an interesting conversation.
That was a good conversation.
So dig in on all that stuff. Go to iTunes or Stitcher or wherever else you choose, NFL.com/DDFP, track down the show. Also want to give a shout out to Ron Lippick. He sent along his book, L-I-P-P-O-C is his surname, Steelers Takeaways, Player Memories Through the Decades. He's talked to some of the biggest names in black and gold history. Franchise seated way over there next to Handsome's left. I should maybe just give you this. You know what? That's what I'm going to do. In real time, I'm going to loan you this book because it's great stories. You can follow him.
Gladly accept.
Yeah, at Pittsburgh Sports is how you track Ron down and see what he has to say about the Steelers if you're so inclined, or if you're a Ravens, Bengals, or Browns fan. You might want to see what's going on with the best team in the AFC North.
That's right.
And let's say a proper hello to him now. But as we jump into the world of pro football and beyond, you'll hear him, you'll see him, you'll read him throughout the season. NFL Fantasy Live is the place to do that. And I always forget your Twitter handle. Is it Matt Franchise?
At Matt Franchise.
I thought so. It's Matt Franciscovich. What's the poop there?
What's going on, Chuck? Thanks for having me. I'm excited. Let's go. Preseason week 3.
One half of the fantasy hipsters.
One half.
Yeah, there he is. Still got that
the better
crazy
half.
Looking
the better
gear.
Looking half.
Oh, I agree.
I mean,
the better bearded half, at least.
That, well, no doubt about that.
Let's go behind the glass for an answer there. Emma VP and Eddie
Emma
Spaghetti.
Emma loves being put on the spot with this type
of stuff.
Yeah,
I love this kind of stuff.
Who's more handsome, Franciscovich or Matt Harmon?
I'm going to side with whoever's here in the studio, so I'm going to go with Franchise.
Well Smart. Played. Comes well played. Spaghetti, right though, goes, look at him, giving the thumbs down to Franchise.
He's really studying the shot right now.
Yeah.
He's going Franchise.
He likes his guys beefier, Fran.
Yep.
Okay. A couple things real quick before we talk football. It's National Waffle Day here on Thursday.
Amazing.
And I don't want to be somebody who's jumping on the bandwagon on its special day. But I say it every year around this time. Who eats pancakes in a world that offers waffles? The waffle gives you a nice little square syrup cup. Why do you do you have self-esteem issues? You don't deserve the syrup cup? Yeah, you have to hope that the syrup absorbs before it runs off the sides and is just wasted there in a brown pool of stick.
That's no way to live.
They're made from mostly the same things, but they do offer texture-wise. There's a different texture between a waffle and a pancake, so that, you know, different times for the different creatures.
So you're gonna advocate for a pancake?
No, I would say sometimes there's great moments for waffles, and sometimes there's great moments for pancakes.
I mean, I'll eat a pancake. Don't get me. I'll eat the pancake if there is no waffle option.
Yeah,
right.
I don't think I deserve that.
I think you do.
What have you? I don't think you know. We've debated before. Would you ever sit down for a meal and have chili and soup, or soup and chili, whichever order you prefer? Right. What would be even weirder, have you ever yourself or seen another ever go pancake and waffle in one sitting?
I don't think so. No.
No. Definitely I do. I have a waffle maker at home, and often in the morning you'll make a big thing of the waffle, you know, the mixture.
The batter.
And say, who wants pancakes, who wants waffles? And some kids will choose waffle and some will choose pancake, which is irritating.
Yeah. I think a waffle intimidates maybe
right.
a young person. Is there something visually that's frightening about it?
The squares.
I don't know what. Maybe it's seen. I you know. Maybe it reminds like it
reminds them of
looks
what?
Like graph paper, and then that like says school. Math. Nobody likes right. school.
Someone might ask them how many squares are there on your waffle, and then they'd be like, "I'm out."
Yeah, give me the pancake. Give me the circle thing.
Right. Also, with the square, whatever you call them, the syrup cups.
Uh huh.
Say you have chopped fruit or whatever. They can fall right in there, and then you get it all in one bite.
There you go.
If you got chopped fruit on a pancake, it's just going to roll right off.
Right. Why
then
do
it's
that?
Two separate
that you may
forkfuls.
Be overthinking that. I mean, like, I get Dave's point with the syrup, but the fruit bit is not.
I have experience
as
with this.
All right, you two. Okay. You two done? You're going to.
That's a thing.
Okay.
Make all sure right. you well, cut your apples hey, into squares.
Hard
so
Knocks
fit.
Has been dynamite this year. I think we can all agree it's really been good with the Buccaneers, thanks to Jameis and McCoy and Mike Evans and the rest of them. Coming up, one of the senior producers from NFL Films Ooh. And a swell fella to boot, Keith Cosgrove, coming up on the show. But
well,
let's
Keith
jump in
is one of my favorite people at the NFL. I can't wait to chat with him.
Is that right?
Yeah.
All right. Well, no, I'm going to, you know, I'd like some personal one-on-one time with him. Well, because he's a Steelers fan, see, so right. I'm going to talk to him probably about that a little bit. I want to hear.
We can talk about
the
Hard Knocks. We can
I know.
About
I'm
going to
pull
nothing.
The curtain. What happens behind the scenes at Hard Knocks?
Right.
You might be a little out of
yeah,
your depth.
Yeah, I would. That would, I would, okay, cool.
I well, don't know that you can.
We'll sort it out. I'll make sure I'm in there.
Here's something. Here's some fun to do before we get into these divisions is you saw the Kyrie Irving for Isaiah Thomas and others deal, Cleveland and Boston, big shakeup over in the Eastern Conference of the NBA. We lament often that there aren't as many trades in the NFL, although I will say in the last couple of years there have been a few trades of significance. None so far, really, this August. Maybe, you know, but between the top. What are you giving me the eyes for, Franchise? Was there a good trade?
Sammy Watkins, Jordan Matthews.
Wait a second. Sammy Watkins and Jordan Matthews. That's right. That was terrific. I that stand corrected. Trade. That was a good trade. You're right. And by the way, talking to Maurice Jones-Drew and a couple other people associated with the Rams these days, they say, look out. Look, I mean, it really does. Keep in mind, Sammy Watkins, look back at the draft. Look at the wide receivers he went ahead of. That doesn't guarantee success, but it does indicate that his pedigree
sure.
was awfully high, that yeah. he was drafted in front of Odell Beckham and a number of other stars in the league. Now, health has always been the issue with Watkins. If he gets it right this year and Cooper Kupp, I mean, you know.
You've got to think, though, the Bills, when they made that trade, they know full well what his health is and therefore didn't have value to.
Yeah, but if anybody lost that three-way trade, it was the Bills. And it seems like they were contract purges, like, well, we don't want to have to deal with trying to figure out the second contract for these guys. Let's just wash our hands of all that. But, yeah, you're right. But optimistically, if he can be healthy, then the Rams figure to be quite a bit better than they were last year. But, all right, either way, let's come up with a couple of trades here and now. Go ahead, franchise. I start with you. Throw out one for one. Don't give me any jive with draft picks and secondary kind of players. Just give me one star for one star that you'd like to see in 2017.
Am I using the list that we have?
No, that's my list.
All right. You know,
I'll throw one out so you can think of it. And handsome, you think of
I've thought of one already. It's on the list already.
You thought of it, and it's on my list?
It's not on your list. It's on my list. The bottom one on the list.
I didn't get it.
Just hurry up. Come
Here's
on.
Mine. Brandon Marshall.
Yes.
The Giants have good wide receivers this year, but Evan Ingram's emergence already here in August, he's sort of a wide receiver anyway. He's going to be that Jimmy Graham, George Reed style, not a Mike Ditka style blocking tight end as much as
not
as
many
an extra.
Of those
right.
In the
he's
NFL
he's much more of a pass catcher than he is anything else. Plus, obviously, they have Odell Beckham and Sterling Shepard. They don't need Brandon Marshall. They do need a running back. You know who needs a wide receiver? The San Francisco 49ers. For whatever reason, they're not as gaga with Carlos Hyde as I am. I think Carlos Hyde's a great talent. Brandon Marshall for Carlos Hyde. Done and done.
It's a good trade.
It's a good trade, isn't
it? I like it.
I would do it.
It might mean the end of days for Brandon Marshall in San Francisco.
I don't know if he would enjoy being shipped off to San Francisco given that state.
Yeah.
If you listen to Maurice as well, our friend, he would say that Paul Perkins is going to have a big season for the Giants. I've heard him tell me that.
He has.
Yes. That's what I mean.
Has he made any waves in the preseason, though?
No, not yet. But, I mean, I asked him the question before the preseason. Maurice says, Paul Perkins, he can do it by himself. No, they don't need any help.
Huh. You know what? Well, I'll defer
I think it's
to
a
Maurice.
Great trade.
I think that you will see. Here's my prediction, micro prediction for the New York Giants. Shane Vereen will get more snaps than Paul Perkins does this year. They're going to be passing the ball a lot. Yeah. You know, they're not built to – they're not the offensive line and beyond isn't built to play power ball. Paul Perkins is an odd fit given that that's the case. I think Shane Vereen will be back there after the early down. All right, handsome, go ahead. Lay one on.
Well, so my one, it's not the two stars that you brought up, but I don't know if you heard, the Seahawks lost their left tackle.
Mm-hmm. I heard about
George Fant. Is it George Fant? It seems like
Fant.
It's a very unlikely name for a large gentleman.
Fant.
anyway, sorry. So Joe Thomas.
Be more appropriate if you took the N out of it for an offensive lineman.
That's kind of mean.
Well, that's what they are, offensive linemen.
No, they're not. They're big-boned and strong. Joe Thomas, who has played for the perennially terrible Cleveland Browns, is a great left tackle. Wouldn't it be nice for him to go out and actually have a chance to win something? And the Browns, this was a hard one because they literally need everything. So
right.
I could have put anything. Richard Sherman was an option, but I figured they're probably not going to do that trade. Jeremy Lane is a guy they've talked up for a long time. He's had a bunch of injury problems. The Browns, if they really need help anywhere, it's in the secondary. So I thought Jeremy Lane, cornerback. Why not?
I like that very much. And imagine if Joe Thomas were to magically, if they're listening and do pull the trigger after Handsome Hank has thrown it out there into the football ether. Joe Thomas, they would be the clear-cut favorite, right?
Sure.
Everybody would say, well, that's the NFC favorite to go to the Super Bowl, I would think. If they had a really good left tackle, it seems to be the case.
To match up with a newly healthy Russell Wilson who's, revitalized and ready to go. I think so.
I like that. Franchise, you have one?
Speaking of the Seahawks.
All right.
Martavis Bryant for Richard Sherman? Let's do it.
Martavis Bryant. So they have a gaggle of receivers. They go get Juju Schuster-Smith, the Steelers do.
Oh, yeah.
Plus, you have the best receiver in the game. Plus, you have Eli Rogers, who is good. And they have between Ayers and some other interesting guys. At least they have some guys that can catch the ball now.
Xavier Grimble.
Right. You keep DHB. He's supposedly potentially on the cut block, but they end up keeping DHB, a valuable veteran in special teams and otherwise. And for the Steelers, you solve the cornerback issue. You got a lockdown corner, big right. physical guy at that, and that's exactly. what Pittsburgh likes there.
That would just make their defense dominant.
In return, the Seahawks, to go along with Doug Baldwin. Doug Baldwin wouldn't, with all due respect, probably wouldn't be their number one anymore.
Correct.
Bryant would be. What would that do for that team? So now they have Joe Thomas and Martavis Bryant. Who can beat them? Wait, that neither one of those has yeah. happened yet. I like that, though. That's very good.
That's a good one.
Here's one. The Jets are bad, like we've discussed ad nauseum. But the one position that they oddly seem stacked is on the defensive line. Sheldon Richardson, they have Leonard Williams, the first pick that is now going into his third year already. I think they could spare him. And what they would do is potentially solve their quarterback issue.
How?
For the next decade. Now, here's a trade that probably would never happen in the real world.
Right.
The New York Jets trade to the New England Patriots, Leonard Williams for Jimmy Garoppolo. Done and done.
Not happening.
Why not? I know that the two teams aren't going to do, but why wouldn't that be a good trade
outside of the rivalry part. I don't know if you noticed, the Jets are trying to lose so they can get a quarterback. Why would they trade away their one decent defensive piece when they're already going to get a good quarterback anyway because they're going to draft one next year?
You're no fun. I like this idea.
That's
what about
a bad. All the other ones were good, Dave. That's a bad one.
Garoppolo in Manhattan. Move over, Broadway Joe. Ooh, the pretty boy's coming to town.
Who's he going to throw the ball to there? There's nobody.
What are you worried about? Who's Sam Darnold going to throw it to next year? What do you know?
Robbie Anderson?
That's right.
Garoppolo would not be, I don't think, held in the same regard he is as right. a Patriot if he was the Jets' starting quarterback with that wide receiving corps.
You're a Garoppolo denier, eh?
Perhaps.
I am a bit as well. Like, I watched him in the preseason the other day. He was.
I don't see what the big deal is.
Could
he's become a big deal because people have talked about him as a big deal for a long time,
and because many would say he's more handsome even than the gold standard Tom Brady.
It's pretty.
That's
unreal.
The other
how good looking he is. It's pretty.
Well, it's quite clear that the Patriots fancy him quite a bit. They could have moved him like they did Ryan Mallett and any number of other guys. They didn't. They clearly hold him in high regard. They're waiting for. In fact, our pal Ross Tucker told us about a month ago that the big storyline of the 2018 offseason is going to be Brady or Garoppolo in Foxborough. That's going to be a major storyline. He's predicting that.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think he's just throwing Patriots. Stuff against the wall either. I think he knows something that leads him to believe that the organization knows that is coming to a head.
He has sources.
I didn't cite any.
Perhaps.
Sources.
Anonymous.
He might have had some blueberry Dunkin' Donut munchkins in his mouth.
Waffles.
When he was here, we challenged him to live up to his word. He said he could eat 100 during the podcast. He ate 4.
Yeah.
Oh. Well, he didn't live up to
his word. So maybe he doesn't know what he's talking about after all. All right, let's get into it now. We've waited all through the offseason. At long last, I think we can properly begin to break down the divisions. Where do you want to start, MVP? Because I don't know if we'll get to both once we dig in here.
Why don't we go with the AFC West?
You want to
it's
do
the
AFC
best division
West.
In football.
Yeah,
why
division.
Would we not?
AFC West is the best division in football. Ooh, we got a good question, too, that we have to address. I guess we'll push that one to next week. But someone from the Czech Republic said, what division has the best and what division has the worst uniforms collectively? Yeah.
NFC East has the best.
No, we'll do that later.
Well, I might as well just supply an answer. So
the NFC East does not have the best. That's an easy
mistake
to make.
Or the AFC West has the best.
No,
but let's do it another time.
Oh, yeah, we're going to do it later. Yeah, that's not right either. See, you almost got me in, Handsome.
He did.
I'm not going to do it, though. All right, the AFC West it is, and Handsome, you just heard it, called it the best division in the NFL 2017. What do you want to do, fellas? Start at the bottom and work our way up?
Well, what's the bottom? Do we agree what's the bottom?
We're not going to agree what the bottom is.
Franchise, I
say
the beard of that, you tell us who's your last place team.
The Broncos, man.
Ah, wow.
I agree.
Simeon.
Simeon does nothing for me. And coming from a fantasy perspective, I want nothing to do with any of those wide receivers. The backfield is a mess. They're trying to see if Jamal Charles has any gas left in the tank.
Really, I think from fantasy perspective, right, C.J. Anderson could be a nice pick for you this
year.
Yeah,
but then they got Devontae Booker. They got this rookie, D'Angelo Henderson, who could get some snaps.
Jamal Charles.
I like C.J. Anderson. I just don't know what kind of workload he's going to have if they have
all
these other guys rotating.
I think he's going to get it all.
He's probably the best back there, but it's a matter of can Simeon move the offense to get to the end zone. What did he throw, like 20 touchdown passes last year or something? 19?
Well, you know, first of all, you have a new coach there in Vance Johnson. It's interesting, too, that you have two new head coaches in both Wests.
Right.
Maybe that's not interesting.
It's not interesting to me.
Well, half of all eight teams that play in the West division.
Still not interesting. You've just said the same thing again a different way. It's still not interesting.
All right. So let's tackle the guys that wear the orange jerseys then in a mile high. Are they your last place
team?
Yeah,
my last place team.
Really?
As well.
All right. Explain yourself.
Same reason. I mean, Simeon, not exciting. I think, you know, the defense, I think they're not as good as the other teams in the division. That's an obvious way of putting it. But that I feel like they are going to be the ones that take the step
but
back
they
while
still
the,
have
all
that...
the other teams have taken a step forward.
But the defense is for real still. The question mark is DeMarcus Ware, I guess. The other one that people are not – I've heard a couple of whispers about this is Aqib Talib is, you know, the decline in that right. is inevitable for a football player has begun there. But then again, they have Bradley Roby, so it's not the end of the world that if that is in fact the case. Plus Chris Harris Jr. The defense is for real. Simeon looked okay. I don't think he was by any means a bum QB last year. I think the bigger story that a lot of people are latching onto is as we foretold about 10 months ago. Paxton Lynch not winning that gig is not good. That's a swing and a miss from John Elway. You can praise him all you want, and he deserves it for the most part. But a first-round QB who still isn't going to be the starter in his second season, you're veering awfully close to bust status for him. But
it also puts into perspective the whole Jerry Jones after that day one of the draft. I tried everything I could to trade up for this Paxton Lynch character and then stumbled into Dak Prescott and got praised for that. He should have just kept his mouth shut. Everyone would think he was a genius.
Isn't that right? Isn't that
like just be quiet? Shh. Yeah, you didn't get Paxton Lynch. Quiet. Yeah. Don't tell anyone.
And by the way, that is an undercovered part of the Dak Prescott story. Is that was one extra layer that he had to overcome is a lack of confidence from the guy who drafted you. We didn't really want you. We wanted the other guy more.
But we couldn't get him. You were kind of our fourth or fifth choice.
Yeah, you know what? That's what I would have given. Yeah, Dak Prescott, I would have gotten him an 8x10 of Paxton Lynch and had it signed for him and said, look, here you go, Mr. Jones, on your induction. God. Like, your doubt of me will motivate
me.
Right. Let him know. I'm going to go with the Broncos in fourth place, too. And the only reason I'm going to do that instead of the Chiefs is because I don't know exactly what to expect out of Vance Joseph or anything else, and I do know that Andy Reid, whatever doubts I may have, he gets his teams from Philadelphia and Kansas City to the postseason at an unusually high rate, and it doesn't really matter what stuff is happening around unless they're decimated like by injury as they were 2 years ago. Mm-hmm. The thing that makes me worried is the Alex Smith, Patrick Mahomes stuff. If Smith slips up this season – it's a nice place, Kansas City, rah-rah. They're not inclined to badmouth their team, as people say. It's much more of a collegiate atmosphere than it is in more hard-nosed football towns like Philadelphia and New York, where they'll boo you out of the joint kind of thing.
You just said that Kansas City's not a hard-nosed football town.
They love their football, but they're much more in the spirit of the Chiefs and Arrowhead, and it's magical, and they're not inclined to badmouth decisions as much. I think that's fair. We've had people sitting here and tell us that, people who have traveled Football America and say that it has that vibe to it. But I do think if Alex Smith in the building has a bad game or two and they're in a tough division, to your point, Handsome, I could see people in the locker room starting to say, like, put the kid in there. He looks so good in the preseason.
I think Alex Smith's been there for long enough and has earned the respect. He's one of those guys that, you know, has grit. You know, and
I agree, but they also know that there's a ceiling, and we've all seen it, and he practically can't throw the ball downfield, and that's a problem.
I agree with that. Equally, I think everyone in that locker room probably knows that Alex Smith will not be there next year, regardless of what happens.
Also fair, and if you're Tyreek Hill and you're running by everybody, but the quarterback can't get you the ball, I could see him having an issue with that specifically.
Right. I was going to say, will Tyreek Hill open that up for Alex Smith this year? We'll see.
Well, time will tell, but he was not an accurate downfield passer. Right. I know that people will say they don't try to throw the ball downfield, but when they do, he's inaccurate, ergo. That's why they don't try to do it very often.
Right.
I'll put them as my third-place team. Handsome, your third-place.
My third-place team is the Chargers. I love the Chargers. Ooh. I'm a big Chargers fan, as you may be aware, and no one on the Chargers fan on the Chargers team gets my love more than Phillip Rivers. I feel like Phillip Rivers, and maybe he's been written off too many times, but I've always said he reminds me of Marino. And the end of his career, as he begins to lose mobility even more, with that offensive line, which once again is beaten up and they've lost some of the starters that they'd anticipated having, including their rookie pick, Forrest Lamp, I just feel like he may become a bit of a statue back there behind the line and going to have a hard time getting away from people. And that's where Marino, at the end of his career, just couldn't do anything. And in the end, it doesn't look good. And I hate to say it, but I think the end is going to come fast for Phillip Rivers.
We've debated it a little bit. I don't know, snake bitten or practically drafting guys that aren't physically built, or I don't know, the training situation or what it is. But Mike Williams and Forrest Lamp, now both neither one is going to get into September, and Mike Williams hopefully is back in time for October, and Lamp's already out. Dan Feeney, the other rookie guard that they have there. I hear you, Handsome, and maybe I just want it to happen, and maybe that's why I'm saying it, but I like this Chargers team. But
I do too. I do too, but I liked it before all those injuries happened, and now the injuries have happened, I like it less than I did before, which is why I probably would have had them in second previously. I can't buy them now.
6 weeks ago, they would have been my division champion
Could
pick.
Be. Right.
And now I feel like I might have to back off of that. I want to hear what Franchise has to say first, though.
I think the Chargers have a lot of firepower on offense. They got Keenan Allen back. Hopefully he can stay healthy. Right. Melvin Gordon kind of broke out last year before he got injured. Hunter Henry is on the up and up.
Hunter Henry, you talk a lot of fantasy. Hunter Henry is – where do you have him in tight end?
See, I think as long as Antonio Gates is still in the league, Hunter Henry's not going to be able to reach his ceiling.
I agree, but I also think he's a top 8 or 10 tight end option in
fantasy. Yeah, maybe like back end of the top 10, a low-end tight end one. I mean, he led the league tied with Cameron Brate with 8 touchdowns last year as a rookie. But he only had 36 catches, so he's very inconsistent. I think he takes a step forward this year, but that kind of replaces that weapon in the end zone for the Phillip Rivers Antonio Gates connection.
I do think when you talk about offensive firepower too, Melvin Gordon is if he's healthy, I think he's for real.
Definitely.
Not to mention a delightful fella and one half of the Melvins who we visited in Costa Mesa last week. Dig up that DDFP, good fun down there with the Chargers, Trey Boston, Melvin Ingram and company. But
I just worry about their defense a little bit.
See, that's what I don't worry about. What's your concern specifically
about
that?
I don't know. I just feel like they were in a lot of close games last year, and they blew leads.
But that was the offense blowing the lead on behalf of the defense, and it was always – and that
Phillip
was
Rivers
the point.
Throwing
it was Phil Rivers throwing a pick at the end
of
the game or whatever, where the defense was like, we did everything we could have done. All you had to do was close this out, and you gave the ball away.
Screw the pooch.
Well, and also between Verrett and Hayward
– Verrett.
I mean, is that it's funny that Ike Taylor has them as his fourth best cornerback tandem.
Wow.
And somehow I feel like that's a slight. And right. I said that to Casey Hayward, too. He's like, I'm all right. Not my favorite. I didn't exactly love where Ike had us. I agree with that. I mean, Casey Hayward was terrific last year, and Verrett was, to your point, Franchise, he's one of the many who was hurt. And if you go Bosa and Ingram, and Bosa didn't start the season, then he got hurt. If you have Bosa and Ingram, I mean, they're going to be devastating in pass rush. And then what we always hear simplistically is the pass rush dictates how good a coverage you have, because the quarterback has to get rid of it more quickly, and he forces passes. Or the secondary, is covering up guys, and so that gives an extra beat to the pass rush to reach the QB. Well, they have both.
Right.
They should be really a terrific defense this year.
But if we're looking at between the Chiefs and the Chargers, I would say the Chiefs have a better defense.
Chiefs have a better defense, and they've been on a roll for the last 2 years.
Right.
They've been winning. They can't stop.
Oh, I said 2 years. You're right. That was 3 years ago Andy Reid didn't make the playoffs with that team. Right, with the missed kick and all
right.
that stuff.
So that's kind of the tiebreaker for me, even though the Chargers have more of an offensive prowess. I would put the Chiefs ahead of them in this AFC West ranking just because their defense is better in my eyes.
Big year. I have said I've advocated for Phil Rivers and said he belongs in the Hall of Fame with another good season or two. But – if you do watch him and you watched him the last 2 years, he hasn't, you can point fingers and blame the health and everything else, but he hasn't been, there feels like potentially that there's been a little drop off there for 17.
He led the league in picks last year.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, but again, you can make an excuse for that too, and people accept it. But that's why I think 2017, big year for Phil. That would be the difference. Straight up, most important position on the field is quarterback. I'll take Phil Rivers over Alex Smith. And I know that's getting simplistic too, but I'm going to ride the potential of 17 in what could be a really dynamic offense and what could be a nasty defense to beat out those Chiefs. So you're going Chiefs franchise
at two
as your second place, handsome. So you're going Chiefs too.
I'll tell you what I like is they I'm just looking at our research packet. They've been consistently good for the last couple of years, and they've got 20 of their 22 starters are coming back again. They're good. Yeah. They've proven they're good.
That's
and
something.
They're seasoned, and those guys are coming back again. How could you not hope that they're
look who
not
knows
seasoned.
His numbers. Look who's getting
well, no, I can read.
Numbers.
I can read.
While you're reading from a research packet?
Yes.
All right.
I admitted to that.
I appreciate that.
Yeah, well, I want to be honest with everyone.
No jive. I'm bummed out that this is where we are as a group, that none of us is going to stick our neck out. This isn't in the spirit of the DDFP preseason division picks here. But, all right, go ahead, franchise.
The Raiders.
The Raiders are the team. Any concern that they played an inordinate number of close games last year and that will return to the mean in 2017?
Their defense was really bad for a good majority of the season. They gave up a ton of points, but their offense was good enough to keep them in games. I think if their defense can improve, that's not something that we need to worry about.
I think the defense does look on paper like it is, in fact, improved. Mm-hmm. But you say if. What's your concern about that happening?
I don't know. I mean, I can't really point to a reason why they gave up so many points and yards. I don't really know what.
The secondary was terrible.
Yeah.
I mean, it was a mess, but they should have fixed it with their number one and number two draft pick.
Yep. And their safety duo is right. Nice. And yeah,
British guy, Obi Melifonwu.
Mm-hmm. I like that. Oh, you say that so nice.
Thank
Mellifluous.
You.
Mellifluous.
Thank you. Mellifluous.
They're also 25th in sacks. Or last in the league in sacks with 25. My bad.
I know. How could that possibly be with
Khalil Mack back there?
Khalil Mack. His name rhymes with sack.
He was the only guy back there getting sacks, apparently.
Yeah. I was never a fan. The day they made the Bruce Irvin signing, I thought, I don't think that's going to fix. Oh, imagine Irvin on the other side of Mack. I don't know.
Hasn't happened yet.
So we'll go Raiders, and we buy the big story, of course, where the Raiders are, aside from the Vegas aspect, is the return of Marshawn Lynch to the NFL and to the East Bay. Do you think that that has any import? Does the team rally around this guy? Is he going to bring a certain spirit that they otherwise wouldn't have, handsome?
I think it'd be great for spirit.
But you don't think he's going to be a great
football
player?
I don't think he'll be a great football player. Huh. Thanks for reading between the lines there, Dave.
I think this. The Seahawks, who are as liberal as it gets with letting their players do whatever they want and behave how they want, as long as they take care of business, I happen to know from talking to a couple of people associated with that, that they were legitimately kind of like, all right, already with Marshawn. I mean, he would refuse. I remember he would do weird stuff in an environment where they embrace that kind of stuff.
Right.
And they were kind of like, all right, already, man. Like, remember when he didn't go into the locker room in Arrowhead and just stayed out there for the halftime and laid there? I mean, he just does weird stuff.
Yeah.
You know, his behavior. And as a leader, even in that Seahawks locker room, what do you think he means now as a Super Bowl champ walking into Oakland and he rules the East Bay and everything else? I suspect he has some influence with the guys in the silver and black. I could see this feel-good story getting a little sideways inside the locker room.
Yeah, and I kind of question his motivation, you know? Like, he's in Oakland. It's his hometown. I understand that. But when he retired, he was on the Bear Grylls show, Running Wild with Bear Grylls, and he asked him, like, what was the highlight of your football playing career? And he said, retiring. And just a couple weeks ago in an interview, a reporter asked him if he missed football while he was away, and he said no.
Yeah, that doesn't sound good.
Is he back for the wrong reasons?
If he came back for money or because he liked a quarterback that was on a certain roster, I'm with Handsome on the spirit part. I think that feels good, but I wonder if he is willing to.
Super excited about it.
Yeah, it seems like it could be, I was going to say a wonderful fairy tale, but I guess it wouldn't be. That's the other question is, what happens if the Raiders win the Super Bowl? Then, goodbye.
Yeah,
that would be one of the weirdest stories in like the last half century of sports in America. If the team wins the Super Bowl and then they depart town,
yeah,
they move to Vegas.
Weird
with the Lombardi Trophy in tow. That would be so strange.
In the Raiders game on last weekend, I was watching it on TV, and as the players walked off the field, which is also as bizarre, I don't know if they do this for regular season games, but for this preseason game, all the players at halftime walked back into the locker rooms via the same tunnel, which is not something normally see.
They were mingling.
But there were fans leaning over, and one of the fans on his jersey had printed F, but the full F, Las Vegas. With the Raiders whatever number on it was.
That's $150 or $200 you ain't getting back.
Exactly.
At least you're gonna have your jersey.
Yep.
I had season tickets to the Raiders, and all I bought myself was this very expensive football jersey to make my statement. All right. So what do you think, MVP? Move on. Don't dig in on the NFC West right now.
Yeah, I think we should save it for next week. Then we can go all in on it.
All right. All or nothing on it. That's what we're going to talk to.
Let's get Keith in here. I want to talk to him.
I'd like you to leave. I'd like you to leave.
What?
You know what? Can I tell you the truth, Handsome? I already talked to Keith. We are going to do that after you guys. Oh, I already did it before you guys showed up.
What?
Sad.
I talked to Keith. So it's
that's even more of a.
How long's this show, Emma VP?
We're already over an hour with that interview you already taped with Keith.
We are? Darn. So we're not going to do NFC West. You don't want to do Brian T. Gray's question?
The one you talked about earlier?
Yeah, the uniform stuff.
If you want to do it quickly, but you're asking for my recommendation.
Yeah.
My recommendation is to toss it to Keith.
All right, let's do the uniform thing quick. I will say, and I'd like to dig in.
I do
in
like
on
the fact that we got through exactly half of Emma's rundown.
I don't want to be.
In
I don't
an hour. Average.
In an hour.
I don't want to be glib about the Hurricanes. I understand it's a Category 1 that's not,
about to come through.
I hope everybody, house and home and the people within those homes are good and safe. But yeah. I've said it before. I don't imagine, like, if your life was disrupted by a natural disaster. I think it was wrong-headed. Whoever decided, let's name these hurricanes after people. Like, Emma behind the glass. Like, what if your house got demolished by a hurricane? You'd be really destroyed. Then on top of it, like, it was Emma who did it. Like, then that's an extra. I don't need that. What, but Emma? Do you think Emma ruined my life?
Right. Do you think that people named Emma would take some pride in that?
Like, Hurricane
Vicky? Hey, did you hear, guys? Hey,
yeah.
Did you hear?
No.
Our hurricane was great.
Do you know that meteorologists and historians say the most severe hurricane of all was named after me?
Yeah.
What do you have going for you?
Exactly. Watch out.
I don't like that, but I think it's right there in front of society. Now, it would be a better thing. Like, I'd rather say out of dignity that my home – I wouldn't want to say, my life has been destroyed by Hurricane Emma. I'd feel a little bit better about it if I could say it was destroyed by Hurricane Butkus or Hurricane DeBrickashaw.
Yeah.
What I'm saying is football offers some great names that would really lend themselves. There's no shame in losing DeBrickashaw, right? To DeBrickashaw.
Right.
You see? Mm-hmm.
How about Darkwa?
There you go.
See? That's a good one.
Yeah, yeah. Handsome. Do you see where I'm going
Hurricane
with this?
Hunter.
See? You're right.
Look, ominous.
How could I avoid it? He had eyes for me from the get-go. Think this through. Let's come up with a good list of those. Emma VP, you have any?
Nope.
Wow.
Is there a correlation between the list of bad hurricane names and bad names for babies?
What's this current one called? I heard it, and I was, as usual. Oh, Harvey.
Harvey. Yeah, that's right.
Harvey. I got beaten up by Harvey.
Yeah, we.
You know, I don't want Harvey getting the better of me.
Yeah. You got, you know? Sandy.
Joe. Like, Joe, yeah, Broadway Joe. What'd you say there, MVP?
Sandy.
Sandy.
Yes, Sandy. Sandy, I need to deal with that on top of everything else I'm dealing with. Now emotionally expect me to try and deal with that it was Sandy who got me?
So dainty.
Yeah, right there. See?
Yeah. You know? Yeah. Not scary at all. I'm going to stay in my house while Sandy blows by because I don't believe that it's strong.
Hurricane Darnell. You know, like Darnell Dockett. You know, that would now see. Mm-hmm. Then how about Hurricane Mean Joe? Right?
Yeah. Now we got nicknames.
All right. Here we go. That's enough.
Hurricane Keith coming through.
Here he comes, everybody. Good to see you, Franchise. At Matt Franchise, NFL Fantasy Live, the podcast, the pages at NFL.com, the TV show soon to be returning. We'll be on the lookout for Franchise and his fellow fantasy hipster, less handsome though he is, Matt Harmon and the rest of the crew there. Handsome Hank doing his work. He's toiling to bring football to the world. To the world. He's bringing it to Mexico City and London once again.
Are you going to come?
Where? To the UK?
One of them.
I'd love to go to Mexico City. Middle of the sea. That's too far.
For me to go to London. You just said you don't want to go to the UK.
No, I'd like to go to the UK. I'd rather go to Mexico City if you gave me a choice. I've always wondered what Mexico City looks like anyway. Okay. Although, you know what? London would be fun.
There's photos online.
That's true. I could do that. Yeah. I could. But that, yeah. Yeah, I'd like to try Mexico City with Handsome Hank. Imagine what we would do down there. The Tres Dias Fiesta, me and Handsome would throw on down there. What a time. All right, let's get to it then. Here he is from NFL Films, our pal Keith Cosgrove, everybody.
That's Dave Damashek.
Oh, yeah, you hear the music, and now you're going to hear the voice of a guy I hope you caught a couple months ago when we kibitzed with him around the release of All or Nothing with the Los Angeles Rams. Here he is, the longtime senior producer of Hard Knocks. Now, I guess we'll figure out what he's doing at NFL Films these days. Our pal, Keith Cosgrove. What's happening, fella?
Great to be back with you, Mr. Damashek.
What a pleasure. Before we jump in on Hard Knocks talk, and by the way, spellbinding season thus far.
One of the best.
Really?
It's on track. We're three in. We got two to go, and we can talk about where it ranks when it's all over.
First, but what are your let's preview, because where we park our cars in the same garage is and our garages are black and gold. The Pittsburgh Steelers. Are you excited?
I'm very excited. I'm a little nervous.
Are you nervous? Why?
Because I think all the pieces are there, except maybe in the back end of the defense.
Well, All or Nothing is a good title for the Steelers as they go into this one. I mean, this is it. The deck is about as stacked as you're going to have it. If you want to, and Tom Brady at 40 is not going to be playing forever. And I really legitimately feel like that the Steelers, this is a tall order to win a Super Bowl under any circumstances. But I kind of feel like they need to not just do that, but they need to vanquish the Patriots for all of football America.
This is
I'll
it.
Say you.
And the quest, this is it.
And they have to do it now.
But the question is, if you're Mike Tomlin, if you're Ben Roethlisberger, did you just spend the month of August waking up every morning saying, we are in all likelihood going to have to go to Gillette Stadium at the end of January and slay the dragon once and for all if we want to go to Minnesota and play in the Super Bowl? Or do you just say, we're the Pittsburgh Steelers, we got to win our division, we got to take care of business, and, you know, whatever happens, happens.
Because the latter is platitudinous, and the former is reality. You, in all likelihood, to get to the Super Bowl from the AFC side, you do at some point have to face Tom Brady. To ignore that is being foolish.
And in Gillette, because the Patriots are starting out 6-0.
I know. Why can't you do something about that? Can't you talk to the football gods over there with all your connections at Films and say, enough's enough. How about somebody in that division pose some challenge to this team already?
Well, it's a top. I mean, Films is more like the Winterfell of the NFL universe. We're out there in the north.
Is that a Game of Thrones reference? I don't really get that. I don't know what.
No.
We're heavily tied into that one. All right, let's talk about the other documentary, because I do enjoy the documentary about the goings on way back at Westeros. You know what was happening in that day and age. But let's talk about 2017. What's happening in the Tampa St. Pete area? I agree with you, Jameis. I'm a little bit like somebody who found an indie band before the most people found it. And I knew Jameis was a winner in terms of charisma a couple of years ago. I knew how good he was going to be, and Gerald McCoy and Mike Evans. Now the world does. And I'm a little raw about it, that everybody's getting in on this thing.
Hard Knocks is a show because it's about training camp. Very little happens in training camp. We always like to brag to everybody. We shoot 350 hours a week for 1 hour of Hard Knocks. Do you know why we do that? Because training camp is boring. Very little happens. Hard Knocks is totally dependent on the people who will become the characters and whatever events end up happening over those 6 weeks. Sometimes the personalities aren't as compelling. Sometimes the personalities are Rex Ryan or Chad Ochocinco. Sometimes nothing happens. Sometimes Chad Ochocinco gets cut in show three. And in this case, I think the crew hit the jackpot.
Yeah, it's really, I mean, you know, you just what I said, with those three guys I just named, it's a winning season, period.
But add to that the fact that the kicker situation played out very early, and with
well,
the story,
not way it was.
Yeah, it was
great,
you know, and I, there's a lot to say about that I think is really the real value of Hard Knocks, but that playing out in the second week of camp rather than over the whole 5 weeks changed the trajectory of things a little bit for the storytellers, but it created an episode where you spent 10 minutes learning about this guy and then seeing the way it all played out. And again, it happened in show three, where we met an undrafted rookie named Maurice Fleming, and you meet him. He's playing. They're just introducing us to the cast of rookies now that are going to carry us through to the end, because that's what we do on Hard Knocks. And lo and behold, his whole story arc ends up playing out. You know, we won't do spoilers here, but his story arc ends up playing out over one episode. And in 2007, we did the Chiefs. It was something we almost stumbled on, is that you could do a whole character arc in one episode. And that's such a great and satisfying mode of storytelling for the audience.
I'm fascinated by it seems like NFL films really, you know, obviously you are filmmakers, but I think people sort of conflate it with, you know, too often with just highlights and the weekly highlights. But right, like any other filmmaker, you guys are trying to construct a beginning, middle, and end and a narrative within each episode and for the entire series. I'm fascinated by that. But I think the thing, and by the way, you mentioned that Chiefs 7. To me, the worst quarterback battle in the history. I mean, imagine how sad you'd be if you were a Chiefs fan at that point. Damon Heward versus Brody Croyle. That, talk about movie making. The tagline for Alien versus Predator, whoever wins, we lose. Never more apt than that QB battle, right?
I'll give you a little inside story on that one. So Coach Edwards was fantastic.
He was fantastic from a comedic standpoint, because he made me feel like, well, if Herm Edwards can be an NFL head coach, then so too can Damashek, because all he does is blow in and out of the room with a bunch of nonsense, and then they get back to their position group meetings. He just like walks in like, come on now, men, today's the day, not tomorrow, not yesterday. Look in the mirror, see what you see, then go about it. But, and then he would walk out of the room. They'd be like, what the hell just happened? What would, you know? Back to the X's and O's, guys.
Coach Edwards was fantastic from a producer standpoint.
All right.
And the director standpoint, this was the first Hard Knocks in several years, and it was something of a reboot. And it was the first year we really for a more cinematic approach to it. It was when the tremendous, revered showrunner of Hard Knocks, Ken Rogers, took over, and I was the co-producer. And I was the person who put the show together, and the great director, Rob Gehring. It was his first run at it. And we decided to try to take a more cinematic approach because HBO had come out with 24/7, the boxing series, in the interim during Hard Knocks' long winter. So when we came back, we said the bar has been raised. It's an HD era now. We need to make – let's go ahead and really make a movie out of this. As good as the Ravens show was, we needed to raise our bar, which was exciting because we wanted to be making movies anyway. But Herm was great about it. Coach Edwards was great until the day he made the decision on the quarterbacks. And he didn't tell Rob Gehring.
Really?
That when he was making the decision. So if you go back and watch the Chiefs episode, we had to sort of improvise how we would show the decision being made. You know, and people always say, there's this assumption that we get everything, that we shoot everything on Hard Knocks, you know. And no, there's stuff you miss. And in that one, we missed when Coach Edwards told the quarterbacks. We never got that moment until the Texans season with Bill O'Brien 2 years ago telling the quarterbacks who was going to be the starter.
Listen. You seem like a clever fella. I fancy myself to be the same. When coaches let you down, I'm not a punishment necessarily, but you're trying to make the best possible film. Why don't you get fast and loose with it and make like they just like put the names in a hat and pulled it out, like just do it all in close up, you know? So I'm like, let's put their names on a wheel, and that's how we decided it. Make it look that way, and then they won't make that mistake again. Herm Edwards and company, you see?
We take great pride in never
it's at being an actual
it,
documentary.
Never treating it like a produced documentary or reality series, you know. And sure, there are scenarios where, you know, you want rookies to go to the zoo on their day off or whatever. But Hard Knocks is the real thing, and we always just wanted to capture what happened in those 6 weeks.
All right, but just imagine a close-up on a hand that looks like it could be Herm Edwards flipping a coin up in the air and then landing like, heads is Croyle, tails is Heward, you know?
Or, and as the case may be, using markers to paint to create a Croyle poster or a Heward. Because if you remember, the show started with Herm making a welcome to training camp poster. So yeah. I think in that one, it would have been a hand making a Heward and a Croyle poster to announce to the team.
I love it. See?
Maybe
now you're opening up.
Maybe it should have been more produced. Maybe it should have.
You're coming around. See, it only took 90 seconds to get you onto my side. Here's the thing about Hard Knocks, better or worse, the human drama that plays out is whether or not it's not, you know, it's cool when the big star, Jameis Winston. And by the way, the authenticity, I'm curious what you think about Jameis, the way he comes across. To me, I know if you're the quarterback of an NFL team, you have to command the room. And you can sometimes get a whiff of like, he's forcing it a little bit. That's outside himself. Jameis's charisma and the going player to player, I believe in you, man. I got your back. When he does that one by one, I find that winsome. Does that come across to you that he seems like a different kind of a guy than a lot of the quarterbacks we've been around?
I can't believe you just went winsome.
I did.
I like that. That's a good word. I think, and I read this a couple places, Jameis's voice, and in show 3, Fitzpatrick actually says to him, your voice is like, do you study Muhammad Ali tapes?
Yeah, that's right. Like, yeah, that's
like,
great.
Like, he is incredible. When he starts talking, you're like, you're almost like, oh no, is he going to lose the thread here? Where are we going with this one? And 9 times out of 10, he lands the plane and gives you something where, That was a hell of a speech by the time it was done. There was one in this show, in this episode before the game. What was it? You can't rewind. And you're, oh, boy, where's he going now? And he did it. He landed the plane again.
I mean, I love it. And then on the other side of things, you have McCoy, who is essentially, I don't know in terms of calling out plays or anything, but just, as a personality, as a leader of those guys, I mean, he's dynamite as well and hysterical.
It's good. To get two leads like that in one season of Hard Knocks.
I love that you call them leads. And it's what presents itself to you. It's not an audition. Well, they're basically auditioning.
Now, having said that, now let me give you my spiel. Let me give you this.
All right, spiel me.
All right.
I hope it's winsome.
Hard Knocks and All or Nothing, the show I produce they both – the real attempt here is to present these people in three dimensions, you know, and to humanize the Jameis Winstons and the Gerald McCoys, you know, and the Jeff Fishers, whomever it may be, in a way that really no other show on TV has any opportunity to do anything like it, you know, and you start a season with Hard Knocks. And some people have said, has Hard Knocks run its course? You know, is it stale? And the way we look at it is every season of Hard Knocks is a blank canvas. And that gives us this opportunity to paint a new portrait of life in the NFL and study a group of people for 6 weeks and capture them as they are and try to tell a story about them that reveals a side of them as human beings, as young men or coaches trying to do a job, a really, really hard job. And like come together with a bunch of other guys trying to do the same thing. And Hard Knocks, they're competing for jobs, a lot of these young guys. And can we tell a story that leaves the audience going, oh, like those are real people that I'm screaming.
Well, I mean, it's hard to imagine that you wouldn't come away from it feeling some of, a little bit at least, of some of the pressure that's on Jameis Winston, that he is the face of that franchise, that they are all looking to him quite clearly, more so than in other seasons, that this is the guy. And that all this talk, all the hyperbole in August about where this team may wind up in January, it's all, I mean, not all, but very real. It's on Jameis to get it done and to live up to those expectations.
Well, simultaneously, we're in a world where we're watching shows 24/7 saying, is Jameis going to make the leap? Is he an elite quarterback? And then you have a show on at the same time where it's like, well, there's Jameis, like, talking about eating hot, like, learning.
I know, you can feel the pressure, but people,
like, there's just this whole other world, and I think Hard Knocks, it's just such a great entry point for everybody when we're all dying for football, and to come in and for us to have an opportunity to make a show that reminds everyone the humanity that lurks beneath it all, beneath fantasy football and beneath, are the Steelers going to finally win a damn game in Gillette in January, and beneath all that is a bunch of people who get paid a lot of money but are pretty young, being paid to do a very, very hard job.
Well, you hit the jackpot with these Buccaneers. I think we agree on that. I think the thing, though, along with, you know, in broad strokes at least, that getting to see the high-end stars and seeing, oh, wow, they have a great sense of humor, or they're charismatic or whatever it is, you know, with this team, that's great, like watching the Kardashians, I suppose, like I say in broad strokes. Oh, that's what it's like to be a big star on the face of the earth in the 21st century. But what is consistently compelling is the guys that are on the fringe trying to make the team. And this year, with the new cut process in the NFL, are you guys having to manage that? I know you don't like when I say this, but I think that it's hard to imagine realistically that players and coaches aren't aware of Hard Knocks at this point, and they don't see how other teams cut guys and which one seems soulless, which one seems the warmest way to do it. Say what you want about Jerry Jones. He's the owner, and he called guys into his office to cut them. That was better than the way the Bengals did it, which was knocking on a door at 4 a.m. and waking guys up to tell them, get out of here. Leave your playbook, though. Get your other stuff. Get your underpants and stuff and get out of our facility.
See, I know this is your thing.
I know, because it's interesting.
This is your spiel.
It's not my spiel. It's my It's
among your spiels.
Spiel. All right, go ahead.
Number one, between Bengals 2009 and Bengals 2013.
They changed, which proves my point. They saw it, and we're like, well, that was a bad look. We better change that. Can't have that happen again.
Number two, I honestly don't. I mean, I think everybody who does Hard Knocks has to do a little bit of homework and say, all right, how does this actually work now that we're actually going to do this, and I'm going to have to do this on TV. So, yeah, they want to know how it's done, how it's been done by other people. But I think at this point that process of cutting players has been standardized to some degree. I think the league has centralized it, and everybody wants things done in a way that gives the players the best chance to understand why it happened and what happens next. So there are a set of steps that have been outlined from the league. So I do think there's a normality to it. But this season, with the new rule, all the cuts in one, mm-hmm. This presents a challenge. We have a funny meme when the HBO executives, Dave Harmon and Rick Bernstein, come to Films every Monday to watch the cut of the show, and all the executives pile in to watch the, you know, here's the show, and then we're all going to tear it apart and try to remake it by midnight on Monday night. We always say, traditionally, show two is the hardest show. This was something Steve Sable used to say. It. He used to come in my office and say, Keith, how's the show? I don't know, Steve. I don't know if we have anything. This would be Sunday morning. He's, well, Keith, traditionally, show three is the hardest show. And every week, Steve would come in and say, well, traditionally, show four is the hardest show. So now every week when Harmon and Bernstein come down, they say, how's it looking? And we say, well, you know, show three is traditionally the hardest show. Now, show four, in my view, actually was traditionally the hardest show. It was the show before the show. We had to make sure we had everything buttoned up with character development so that you really knew what was at stake heading into the finale. And also, you had the dress rehearsal. Show four is the dress rehearsal because it's the third preseason game. Mm-hmm. So you get the last meaningful action for the starters. And then show five, they just fade into oblivion, and it's just got to be about these rookies. So, and then show four would always end with the first round of cuts to kind of get you ready for show five. It's like the minor battle in Game of Thrones before the big battle in the penultimate episode where the major.
It's like when the Ravens dies. And Steelers fight tooth and nail to see who survives the North, only to get the Patriots on the other side.
Get their doors blown off at Gillette Stadium 2 weeks later. So yeah, so now there's a new game, and that's why I say one of the reasons that the team hit the jackpot this year is because. Aguayo situation played out in show two. Another thing happened in show three. A guy actually got cut in show one, which usually doesn't happen. So I don't know what will happen in show four. But what I do know is that when 37 players lose their, you know, get cut on that last weekend, that's going to happen on Friday afternoon, Saturday morning. The show airs on Tuesday night. So we used to have like 20 cuts to go through or whatever the number was. Now there's going to be 37. And our team of editors back at Films is going to have to sift through all of that. They're not going to know all the outcomes beforehand. And you're going to have to figure out which stories really need to be told that the audience is going to connect with. Because this particular season has been driven so much by the stars, by Jameis and by Gerald McCoy.
Right, exactly.
There hasn't
right.
been as much focus on the rookies. So there's a lot of heavy lifting for the team to do. And by the team, I mean Ken Rogers, Paul Camerata, who now has my job. He puts the show together with an editor named David Stiles. And now there's a cast of 20 editors that are going to be working around the clock. And then the directors, Matt Dissinger, who is a tremendous director, Shannon Furman, his assistant. They got five directors down there and a crew of 30. And they're going to shoot all of this. And they got to get about, it's got to be fed back to Films. And they're going to have like 24 hours to go through it all, figure it out, and put show five.
I think the most interesting angle, my two cents is, and I require you to take it and pass it on to all your editors, is what's interesting about that is, I don't mean to put GM and coach in the hot seat with this, but their interactions in between the cuts as they're doing this sort of, this, as I assume they're going to be semi-rapid fire and like, now what do we have? Let's get our ducks in a row on this and how we're going to handle this guy. I think that is interesting as much as when the guy is in the room getting cut, like who's next and how they feel about doing that. That's a tough spot to be in. I wouldn't want to be the axe man.
No, and every team does it differently.
I know.
We don't, you know, we'll see how. What's interesting about the Bucks, which I don't know everybody realizes, is, you know, 2 years ago we were with Atlanta when Mike Smith was the head coach and Dirk Cutter was the
And he had his Tevas on, too. Did you know that was going to be a problem when you saw Mike Smith and Tevas on day one and he came in and he tried to use bad words at the team, but it was like, well, Matt, come on, coach. Wear some combat boots. Don't wear the Tevas to give this speech. Right?
2 years ago.
Go ahead.
They've done it before, Mike Smith and Dirk Cutter. Mm-hmm. So they have experience. And now so we will see what they learned and how they want to play it this time around. Because you know, Dirk Cutter's the head coach and you don't think he actually went through this 2 years ago. He knows exactly what the show's gonna do and how to maybe deal with that.
All right. But tell you want to get in his ear, tell Cutter, like, don't wear the Tevas. That's my first. That's the only tip I'm going to give you, Coach. No,
well,
you don't want
to. Well, you know, we don't typically get into wardrobe.
No
decisions. We want them to be.
I wouldn't want to get cut by a guy. I wouldn't want to get fired by somebody wearing Tevas. You know, I'd be like, that would add an extra little turn of the knife to me.
I mean, I think they, you know, Mike Smith chose his footwear.
I agree. He did.
You respect that decision. And his, I think his work in the booth in this season's Hard Knocks has been one of the unexpected delights of the series. I think seeing Coach Smith.
I agree with
In the coach's booth has been, it's been neat to see him again. He's a terrific coach and a great guy.
I agree. More egregious footwear in history of Hard Knocks. Mike Smith in Tevas, Jameis Winston in Birkenstocks.
That was interesting.
Yeah, it was interesting.
That was a surprising.
Interesting word.
That was a surprising choice.
Yeah.
I didn't expect that at all.
No. Yeah.
I liked it.
I didn't think it was winsome. That was not winsome. Hey, talking with you is, though. There he is, everybody. Keith Cosgrove. Oh, what's happening with All or Nothing this year? Do we have an update yet?
Something.
Something? Do you know the team?
I'll tell you in March of 2018.
You already know the team, don't you? You know, I'd like to throw in for the Philadelphia Eagles. Man, Chris Long, Malcolm Jenkins. Ooh.
They're a good group.
Oh, I love it. Yeah, hard not to root for them with what they're doing this offseason. All right, there he is, Keith Cosgrove. There he goes out the door. You know what? If we had more time, I would have cut you. Like, just to let you feel what it's like.
I do, next time.
You know what I also don't like is when the coach or GM or whoever goes in for a hug. Like, don't put your hands on me.
At the end of it.
You're showing me the door now. You want a hug, too? You don't get it both ways, friend.
Well.
You know? See, the music is playing us off. More Sam Spence, too. How about that, too? Can never.
Dave Robideau is what you can't be. I love Sam Spence.
Oh, Spence.
You know, have you
this
met
is Spence here.
Have you met Dave Robideau?
I've never had.
He's the most talented person employed by the NFL.
Really?
Yes.
My
composer at NFL Films.
Fine, I guess I'm chopped liver. All right, we'll talk with you next time. In the meantime, it's been a thin slice of heaven.
See ya.